Jay Marvin Show.
Hey, Jay.
Jay Marvin.
This is the Jay Marvin Show on AM 760 Progressive Talk.
Good morning. This is Aaron Hart filling in for Jay Marvin. It's 7 past the hour. We're going to talk to Dave Krieger, columnist of the Rocky Mountain News, coming right up here. I am no football expert, but yesterday we had a chat about what we thought Mike Shanahan would probably be coach of the Denver Broncos forever. And then, lo and behold, I'm reviewing the news last night, prepping for the show, Dave Krieger, as you know, and I'm going, what? Goodbye, Shanahan.
Yeah, we nailed that one, didn't we?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking we were sort of like on the order of, I felt sort of like Ben Bradley must have felt. Remember when he went to, I don't know if you've read it, that he went to Lyndon Johnson, and Lyndon Johnson told him that he was going to fire Herbert, the head of the FBI, the lunatic who used to never.
J. Edgar.
That's it, J. Edgar Hoover. And he said he felt like he was responsible for Hoover having been appointed for life. We did it in reverse.
And you know, Shanny lasted almost as long as J. Edgar.
Yeah.
But, you know, without the dressing as a woman part.
Well, yeah, without the dressing as a woman and no left turn part, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But he does have this big house now, yesterday that we were gossiping about, 35,000 square feet. I guess he could invite us all over for a roller skate. I don't know.
Yeah, probably the most interesting angle on this is the real estate angle. What happens to the massive construction project in Sherry Hills Village? Yeah, it's a great question. Not a great time to be selling the most expensive house in Colorado, but
no. Hence, I was thinking maybe you could turn it into a roller skating rink.
Yeah, or maybe a museum. You know,
a museum.
The Shanahan era might be worthy of a museum.
That's it. 21 years. You could have all of the different and various incarnations. He's changed defense, offense, special teams coordinators.
You know, every president gets a library. Why not? Why not a Shanny library?
A Shanny library.
All those playbooks.
Playbooks. Sure. You could tour the quarterbacks. You could have. You could have like a
Jake Plummer room.
Wax museum.
A Brian Greasy room. You bet. Yeah.
Max Museum of all the different quarterbacks and linebackers and linemen and all that. And
you'd pay to see that, wouldn't you, Aaron?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'd take my nephews to see it.
There
yeah.
you go. Yeah.
I would. I actually would. I wouldn't even spill beer on 58 on the way there.
You could make it part of, you know, put Elitch's in part of the tour. Just make it a whole kids grab bag.
You know, we may be onto something here. We could have a pass room where you could learn to pass like Elway. You know, you could have a virtual game where you, like a Wii game where you could become an NFL quarterback, you know?
Absolutely. It could be a whole theme park, yeah.
And we could. You could set yourself up just like you do at the Rock Museum here. You could have your own special team.
Yeah, and it's big enough. You could actually put a football field in there and play a game.
I know. I think we're really on to something here. Maybe this could be his whole second career.
You know, this may be what he's going to announce today. Who knows? You
know, yeah,
it's very odd, very unusual that a fired coach makes himself available to the media. So maybe he has something to say about
here's
the future
what I
plan.
Is he going to talk in platitudes or is he going to talk straight, you know?
Well, it's pretty much always
platitudes.
But yeah.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, I doubt if he changes from platitudes. Which one do you think he'll use today? Do you want to? I mean, maybe we could start a drinking game right here, right now on the radio. Although, don't drive. I want to be responsible. Don't drive if you're going to do a drinking game when you watch the press conference, okay?
Yeah, it's a little early for that anyway. But,
yeah.
You know, Mike is famous for the anytime blank happens in the National Football League, you have a chance to do something special. So you might come up with a variation on that. I suspect that they will talk about, that Mike will talk about his long tenure here and all the good things that have happened. Certainly he's been the most successful coach in Broncos history, so there's plenty of that to talk about. And my guess is that there won't be that much talk about the future at this point because nobody probably knows. But if Mike Shanahan wants to coach again in the NFL, I'm sure he'll have a job relatively quickly.
Well, I was going to say there are quite a few teams without coaches at the moment. So.
Yes, there are. And New York and Cleveland have just gotten turned down by the most popular candidate out there, Bill Cowher. And Mike Shanahan probably takes second spot now. So they may both have already been in touch with him. They may have called him already.
Interesting. Now, what do you think prompted this? Because yesterday you were really pretty convinced that we would never see the back of Mike Shanahan. As long as he wanted the job, Pat Bowlen was going to keep him there.
Yeah, as well, you know, that is what Pat Bowlen had said publicly over and over again, and that's why we had that impression. But obviously, Pat Bowlen doesn't speak publicly very often. And so when a change comes in his thinking, you know, clearly we didn't know. And a change did come. And I think the embarrassment of the Broncos' finish this year, you know, they were leading their division by three games with three games to play. All they needed to do was win one or have San Diego lose one for 3 weeks, and they were going to be in. And none of those things ever happened.
No,
that's
Sunday
pretty
night.
Amazing, you know. That hasn't happened since 1967.
Really? Since 67?
That's when they went to divisions, and no one's done that since then.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it's a long
that's
time.
That's really awful. Oh, dear. Well, now, you speculated in your column that you wrote that you think maybe John Elway may return to the organization.
Right, and speculation is the right word for that because it's just my conclusion after watching these guys. But John Elway made it pretty clear over the last several years that he would like to be back into the NFL in an executive capacity. And it was also fairly clear that Mike Shanahan was never going to let that happen as long as he was in charge, not because of any particular enmity between the two of them, but just because Mike Shanahan held all those jobs. He had all the executive positions, and he really didn't want to give up any authority. And John Elway, on the other hand, did not want a purely ceremonial position. He wanted some actual authority. So he's had some training with the Colorado Crush of the Arena League. It's not exactly the big time, but it's, you know, similar. He ran a football team. And Pat Bowlen was his partner in that venture. I think Pat Bowlen would like to have him back in the organization. I think it wasn't possible while Shanny was there. So I do think that in some capacity, there's a fairly good chance that John Elway will find his way back to the organization. Whether that's, you know, being in charge of the front office, that's another question. Don't know.
Well, now, Dave, in terms of that, you know, what if since Shanahan held so much power, do you think that now Pat Bowlen will break it up among several different people now? I gather you think that may happen.
I do. I think it's unlikely. You know, it's a very unusual model in the NFL anyway to have one guy wearing all those hats, and it just very seldom works. It worked for Shanny early in the late 90s, but it hasn't worked for him for a decade. Mike Holmgren up in Seattle was the other guy who's famously
unlimited power,
and they took half his power away from him a couple years ago, and now he's out altogether. Bill Belichick in New England is really the only guy left who has final say on everything, and of course they've won three Super Bowls in this decade, so he's still okay. But my guess is that Pat Bowlen will bring in a general manager, and that general manager will hire a coach, and that's a much more traditional arrangement.
Well, now, if Elway did take a position, how do you think that would work? I know that you talked about Jay Cutler having very similar gifts to Elway, and that might be a cool collaboration for them.
Yeah, one of the odd things, it seems to me, since Jay Cutler got here has been the extremely limited amount of interaction he's had with John Elway. John Elway, as a sort of a mentor or tutor or just sounding board for Jay Cutler, just makes so much sense. It seems obvious. They're both very similar in terms of their size, in terms of their athletic gifts, in terms of their arm strength. Jay Cutler obviously has not accomplished anything like what John Elway accomplished, but he's a young guy. And so it always struck me as a little odd, and I asked John Elway a couple of years ago if he would be interested in tutoring Cutler, and he said if he was asked, he'd be happy to. But he was never asked. And that's because, you know, Mike Shanahan had his own people, his own quarterback coach, that he wanted to be coaching Jay Cutler, and he didn't want, you know, I guess a variety of voices or a multiplicity of voices in Jay's ear. Nevertheless, it's a combination that just seems to make sense. So with Mike gone, if John Elway comes back to the organization, it would not be as a coach because John Elway's made it fairly clear he doesn't want to be a coach. But I'd still think that it would provide an opportunity for him to sit down with Jay on a regular basis and just talk about, you know, his experience, what's going on, and how he dealt with some of the obstacles that Jay Cutler and most quarterbacks have to face.
Well, that sounds like a plan then. You know, they listened to you. They did the opposite, though, what you said yesterday, so we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I think I should have stuck with the column where I had Pat basically telling telling Mike that either he was going to accept a new GM or he was going to be out.
He was going to be out. I know, that was brilliant. You foreshadow, foreshadow, foreshadow.
Yeah, just kept my mouth shut and let my writing talk for me, huh?
Yeah. I don't know, Dave. Do you want to stick around for another 10 minutes or so?
Sure.
Through the break? Okay. Dave Krieger is joining us. He's from the Rocky Mountain News. He's a preeminent columnist for the Rocky. We'd love to have your thoughts as well at 303-713-7600 on this New Year's Eve day. I'm filling in for Jay Marvin on AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk. It's 17 past the hour. Time to go to traffic with Todd Parker. We'll be right back. And if you want to ask Dave a question, here he is, 303-713-7600. I'm Aaron Hart, filling in for Jay Marvin. It's 21 past the hour. It's good to have a colleague from when I lived in Denver before joining us. Is Dave Krieger of the Rocky Mountain News. He is their sports columnist and has been writing extensively about the situation with the Denver Broncos, who have had a miserable season, I think it's safe to say. And Mike Shanahan is now out after 21 years. That really is stunning. You know that?
It really is, Aaron. If you think about how long he's been here, you know, there were some comings and goings surrounding his conflicts with Dan Reeves back in the 80s and 90s. But Mike Shanahan first showed up here in 1984.
Wow.
He was a very young offensive assistant from the college ranks that Dan Reeves brought in. Same year he brought in Alex Gibbs, who would turn into a legendary offensive line coach for the Broncos. Both of them would be major participants in the Broncos getting to the Super Bowl, first early in John Elway's career when they couldn't win it, and later, of course, when Mike Shanahan took over as head coach and they did win it twice. But he has been a major part, a major thread of leadership at the Broncos for all that time, for really a quarter century, with some timeouts when he went to L.A. and coached for Al Davis for a little while, when he went to San Francisco and was an offensive coordinator and won his first Super Bowl with the 49ers. But then came back here in 1995 to take over as head coach and has been head coach for 14 years, which is longer than any coach other than Jeff Fisher in Tennessee in the National Football League over that time.
Wow. Now, what stands out, certainly the careers of John Elway, Terrell Davis. What stands out in your mind in terms of and the achievements of back-to-back Super Bowl championships, not so shabby? But what do you think his greatest strength was, and what do you think his greatest weakness was?
Well, his greatest strength, I think, clearly is as an offensive designer, an offensive football coach, the X's and O's part. He came here as a young man, and that was his strength. He was basically, he took over coaching John Elway, who was very frustrated at the time. It's hard to remember that. It was only his second year. But Dan Reeves had a very conservative philosophy, and John Elway was a wide open, throw it long quarterback out of Stanford, and Mike Shanahan was the bridge between them, and he had some terrific offensive, innovative theories at that point. You know, we forget, but he was called somewhat satirically, but not entirely. He was called the mastermind in the 90s because he was that good. He was as an offensive game planner, he just could not be beaten. But the story, which is similar to the Dan Reeves story, which is ironic because the two of them didn't get along at all.
Right.
The story was that, you know, he had to have more and more control. These guys really do tend to be control freaks. And it's easy to understand why, because if they're not in control, then they get blamed for things that they didn't do. And that's what Mike Shanahan found when he coached the Raiders. He had no control over personnel. He had no control over anything except what happened on the field. And he ended up getting blamed for it, the fact that they didn't have very good players. So when he came to Denver, he said, I want full control. I want to decide who the players are. I want personnel control. I want front office control. Oh. I want to run the whole thing.
Yeah.
And as often happens when people do that, you know, you spread yourself too thin.
Yeah.
So to answer the second part of your question, I think the weakest part of his game was as a general manager, as a front office guy. His personnel selection was erratic, to say the least. He had some great ones. He was the guy who drafted Terrell Davis, after all.
Right.
Nobody else had him picked out as a great back. But he's also had some terrible ones, and defensively especially, he just did not seem to have an instinct for who would turn into really good NFL players and who would not.
If you could manage the Denver Broncos for a day, who would you put in to be defensive coordinator? Is that the name of the position, I guess?
Well,
who would you put in to be in charge of the defense?
In charge of the defense? Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of young guys out there. Generally speaking, you want someone who's sort of an up-and-comer who has been a coach, position coach on the defensive side or a coordinator. And there are names like Steve Spagnuolo, for example, of the New York Giants.
When you
look around the NFL at the best defenses, you can pretty much line up those defensive coordinators and say, well, they know what they're doing.
Like Jim Schwartz being mentioned as well, I think.
That's right. He's another good one. Tennessee's defense is terrific. But the problem is, for the Broncos, you're not going to be able to coordinate a great defense until you have great defensive players, and they don't. And so the first thing you need is a general manager who's going to go to work rebuilding the personnel that side of the ball. And once you have some personnel, then you can bring in a coach who can coach those guys up. Frankly, I don't think Vince Lombardi could have coached this defense to be particularly good because they just don't have the horses.
Yeah, okay. Metaphorically speaking, as the Broncos.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I got to tell you something. Mike Holmgren, on his way out at the Seattle Mariners, provided a champion breakfast here. I'm working out of their signature station here in Seattle.
Is that right?
So when you go to the press conference, I think you should find a good spread, man. Call out, say, hey, Holmgren provides good food for his reporters. Get some good work here.
Well, I'll certainly mention that, although there's a certain irony to Mike Holmgren providing a championship breakfast in Seattle since, they didn't ever quite get there.
I should not have used that word in that sentence because now I have to face the fact that he whiffed every single time.
But a nice guy, nice guy,
Very
for a football
nice guy
coach especially.
Good choice in breakfast. Well, and I think, I know that you won't do it necessarily, but I'm definitely free, since I'm a talk show host and can be silly. Not that sports columnists can't either, but
we're very serious sports
hosts. I'm going to propose that we really turn the house into a theme park. I think that's a great idea. I think we should just throw open the Shanahan house to what everyone wants to use it as.
I can see the big neon letters now, the Shanna Mansion.
What
do you think a good admission charge would be? A little $9.95, you think?
Oh, I don't know. Paul Allen up here gets quite a few buckos for his rock museum, which I think he charges too much at $19.95. But, I think you could maybe even get $12.50.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you? Take over for Ocean Journey, the aquarium that never really took off here.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, you could put it inside, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, an all-weather arena. It would be fabulous.
There's room in there for really anything you want. Yeah.
I know.
You can maybe take the last piece of ice out of the Arctic Circle and get it down there before it melts. Something along those lines.
And since people complain that Barack Obama didn't spend enough time doing things in Denver, he could come by for a bowling.
Absolutely. In fact, they could move the Pepsi Center inside the Shanna Mansion, and we could do the whole convention all over again.
That's a plan. All right. Now, before I let you go, because I love baseball passionately, any hope for the Colorado Rockies?
Absolutely. I think so. I've always thought so, though. They have a lot of young players, and they all came together in 07 very well. They did not come together last year, and now, of course, everybody thinks that they're awful again. It doesn't take long. They were just in the World Series 14 months ago. Everybody hates them already. But, yes, I think they have a lot of young talent. You never know. The problem is, of course, that they don't have any money, and so you're not going to get great pitchers here. So you're going to have to hit your way out of it. But they've been known to do that. They've lost Matt Holliday, of course. They had to trade him.
But
a year ago they traded Jason Jennings, and everybody was up in arms about that because they'd never heard of the people they got back. Turned out the people they got back were much better. So the three kids that they got for Matt Holliday, you never know. If they come through, Rockies could have a comeback year in them.
Yay! Now I feel warmer in the hot stove leave. Thanks for giving me hope. I always need it in this point because we're not to spring training yet. And, it's that dark day of winter, and you've just got to have hope for baseball. So thanks.
That's right. Dave. Well, pitchers and catchers, only 6 weeks away, Aaron.
Yahoo! Thanks, Dave Krieger, for
taking
time
out
of your busy day.
You.
Enjoy the press conference. I hope you get a good breakfast out of the deal.
Thank you. I'll let you know.
25 past the hour. Dave Krieger, columnist of the Rocky Mountain News, heard from. Thank you all for joining me. Listen, hey, call up. What do you think we ought to use the Shanna Mansion for? I think Dave Krieger and I are onto something. I think a theme park. I think we all ought to charge admission, go by, and have a little roller skate around. But, really, a theme park for football couldn't be bad. I mean, I might even go to a wee thing and pretend to be John Elway for a day. That could be really fun, particularly if I, I'm not such a bad tosser of a football. I just can't toss it very far. But I can actually get the spiral rolling around. 303-713-7600. I'm Aaron Hart, filling in on the J. Marvin Show. So what do you think? Dave Shanahan's gone. We can talk amongst ourselves. Progressives like sports, too. I love baseball the most, though. Is baseball more? What is the most progressive sport? See, I think it's baseball. I think it's baseball. I think more right-wing conservatives like football, I think. I just think that's true. Am I wrong about that? 303-713-7600. I'm Aaron Hart, filling in on the Jay Marvin Show. And we're going to have a specialist in Colorado politics next hour who phoned in when I was speculating about Senator to give us the latest skinny on who she thinks we might have as the next senator from Colorado. So thanks again to Dave Krieger for being such a sport and coming back to talk about Mike Shanahan and his departure. There will be a press conference later this morning. Don't forget those other cluster stations, they who must not be named, will probably be carrying that live after this show. So stay right here, 303-713-7600. This is the Aaron Hart version of the Jay Marvin Show. Time for Progressive Traffic with Todd Parker, coming up next. Hi, this is Aaron Hart on AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk. Good morning. I'm filling in for Jay Marvin all week. We're going to do some countdown list. John Turk hates them, but I kind of like them. I like looking back and counting things down. And I have some really fun, kind of unorthodox list to count down with, like the 10 top healthiest diets in America, political scoops of 2008, the political blunders of 2008. So we'll talk about that. I love Politico, by the way. Such a fun website. Now, we also, this is sort of local hour. We just spoke to David Krieger of the Rocky Mountain News, Dave Krieger. He is their columnist, and he'll be going to the press conference later this morning at 11 when Mike Shanahan and Pat Bowlen explain it all to us. And then I also, during the show, Jennifer Koken was listening. She is the chair of the Denver County Democrats, and she heard me speculating on who will be the next senator of Colorado, since we have one now, Roland Burris, nominated by Governor Rod Blagojevich. I doubt if this senatorial appointment causes as much controversy, perhaps, Jennifer. But good morning. I'm glad your ears were sharp and you were up early this morning and haven't started your New Year's imbibing yet, I'm assuming.
Well, Aaron, thanks for having me on the show.
Good morning. Well, thank you. It's fun to talk to you. Now, I have been speculating wildly since I've been filling in last Friday about who's going to make it and who isn't. Governor Bill Ritter, as governors do, wields the power of kingmaker. He's got to choose wisely, though, because you guys have got to help get him elected the next time, he or she. Who's your top candidate? Who are you leaning towards?
Well, I heard you say it this morning. My top candidate is Speaker Andrew Romanoff, and let me tell you why. I have a great deal of respect for Congressman Ed Perlmutter. I have a great deal of respect for Mayor Hickenlooper. But we do have to, as you just said, think about 2010. I think Ed Perlmutter is perfect for that district. We had Mike Feely lose the race a number of years ago to Bob Beaupre by 141 votes.
How that happened, I still don't know. But, yes,
exactly.
I understand, especially given Bob Beaupre's never
mind. Yeah. And, you have an issue where if we were to appoint Congressman Perlmutter, you'd have a special election in a very, very short period of time, which would go to the highest bidder, I quite frankly think. I think Congressman Perlmutter is perfect for that seat. I think with Speaker Romanoff, you've got a number of things. You have somebody who doesn't create another vacancy. You've got somebody who has had a very excellent political career, somebody who has traveled around the state, who has the support, by the way, of 40 out of the 64 Democratic Party county chairs across the
state.
He's the only guy who's called any of us to ask for our support. He's a longtime party activist and loyalist, not to say that Congressman Perlmutter isn't, but he hasn't gone so far as to ask for our vote.
Well, you're in kind of a dicey situation because, I mean, I know I was told that Romanoff didn't want to come on the radio and actively lobby for the job, but apparently he's doing it behind the scenes. I'm glad to see. No, look, I like him. I have talked to him several times as a talk show host and always been impressed by he's very congenial and convivial. I've never met him in person, so I don't know what he's like in person. But if charisma over the phone lines is any indication, he's probably really good at his job and has the kind of je ne sais quoi that a politician needs in order to get elected and perhaps as importantly, sadly, to raise millions of dollars to run for office. What is the current cost of a Senate race in Colorado? $6 million, do I remember
that
correctly?
That price tag is probably a good one, and I think, you know, in the last 4 years in particular, as we've turned really the state on its head from Republican state to a Democratic state, it's cost more and more. So one of the criticisms has been, well, Congressman Perlmutter comes with a war chest of over $500,000, and do we really know if Speaker Romanoff can raise the money? I can tell you, I've worked with him for 1.5 years, expanding the majority in the state house. I sat with him while he, you know, wore his fingers out dialing for dollars and raised $3.5 million across the state. He raised $1 million for his last ballot initiative. He's a proven track record of raising money, and he's already reached out to people in Washington, D.C. So he has some connections, while certainly not the experience of the last couple of years Congressman Perlmutter does. I think you're right. He's very diplomatic. He's very smart. He knows how to reach across the aisles. He understands that you can't simply pass policy on partisanship. He understands that when you are thinking about policy, you have to think about the policy itself and not the person. So he's not one to criticize others.
Where is there anybody in Perlmutter's district who you think could be elected? And forgive me if Romanoff happens to live in his district, because I'm not entirely sure.
No, he doesn't live in his district. I don't think so. My biggest fear is Bob Beaupre goes for it and gets people know. I have to stay up worrying about that.
We just got rid of Marilyn Musgrave for the first time. I can't take those guys again ever.
Right. Exactly.
Now, you know, and I'm not necessarily opposed to, I know this is going to be sound like heresy to you, but I'm not opposed to moderate Republicans. I just find the right-wing crazies frightening, and I do not want them in charge anywhere near my government anymore, particularly after the last 8 years.
I'm with you. I hear you.
Now, U.S. Senator Gary Hart, former, has said he is not interested. Were you surprised that Diana DeGette pulled out, or do you think she's been quietly told, hey, you're not going to get it because you're going to have trouble getting elected statewide, so bow out? Because, you know, her release was the standard, my family, and, you know, all those things that politicians say. And I don't mean to make fun of her, because I like her very much and I admire her very much. And druthers, I'd love to have her see her as a senator. I'd love to see a woman as a senator, quite frankly, Jennifer.
Yep, I'm with you. But, and, you know, I worked for Congresswoman DeGette also for a year. I have a great deal of respect for her. Even if somebody said to her, you need to bow out, she would do what she thought was right for herself and for her district and for her family, quite frankly. It is the case, while sometimes you hear a lot of politicians talk about, oh, it's my family, and that is their easy way out. She is very dedicated to her girls. They're getting to the age where I think her oldest is heading to college and her youngest is in her last couple of years of high school. And it's always been, I think, a tough spot for her as a mom to stay away from her kids. Not that it would be any tougher for a dad, but girls and their mom have a particular bond. And I think she probably sat down with her husband and with her kids and talked with them about it. And they probably decided together as a family, because that's the kind of thing that they do. And as I said, I think if somebody said to her, hey, you need to step aside, she would say, you know what, if I think this is right, my family thinks this is right, I'm going to go for it, I'm going to fight. She's a fighter. She also has a very prominent position in the House, and a very, you know, as deputy whip. And so she would become the junior senator. Does she want to go from being a big fish in a small pond to a smaller fish in a very large pond, even though there's fewer senators?
Interesting. And there are several women in the Senate who are ahead of her in terms of seniority and other things. Question, including our own Washington State's Patty Murray. Wondering then, if this is the case, then who do you, Governor Bill Ritter? When is he going to make a decision? Because we're like on December 31st, man.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. I had called his office yesterday to see if I could get in to see him. I'd sent emails, and I was going to gather up some of the other county chairs and see if we could get in to see him. And of course,
you were going to go pressure our beloved gov.
Absolutely, that's what the political process is
about. Good for you, Jennifer.
And I was told, well, you know, his schedule is very full up over the next couple of weeks, and then I had seen that he might be making a decision in the next couple of days. I don't envy his position. He's in a tough spot because he's got good people. The question is, if you weighed all of them equally, where are we going to be at in 2 years politically? What do we need to be worried about? Denver County increased voter turnout by 5% in the last election. We're going to make sure those very same people turn out again, with or without President-elect Obama driving that turnout at the top of the ticket. We'll make sure it probably won't be as big of a turnout, but certainly greater than it has been before. And with all those other county chairs, those people are going to work hard to make sure Speaker Romanoff gets elected. The governor is in an enviable position because he's got great people to choose from. I don't think the governor of Illinois likely had the same opportunity to take the time to choose who should be in that state being under duress or without pressure.
No, he's trying to jam. This is all about jamming Barack Obama and the U.S. Senate. This is about him thumbing his nose. I won't even say it as speculation. I just, my intelligence guided by my experience says red line. You know, this guy is just, because he also announced he wasn't going to do it. And, you know, I know the guy's innocent until proven guilty, but there are wiretaps. He's recorded. You know what I'm saying?
I know. I think he started imbibing at the beginning of the week.
Maybe. Now, Jennifer Kogan, I've got to dance to a break. Would you hang in and we could maybe discuss a little bit more about local politics coming up?
Happy to.
Because we have 2009 coming up. It's a whole new ball game. How fun.
All right. Happy to.
Yes. Okay, great. Jennifer Kogan will rejoin us after this break. It's 303-713-7600. She is the chair of the Denver County Democrats. So we have an insider to talk about this. And, hey, Governor Bill Ritter, if you're listening, you want to give us the scoop about who you're going to appoint. Remember, I did hold your first Senate, your first cyber debate, and you did win those elections, just to put in a good word for coming aboard the show. It's Jay Marvin's show. It's 45. Make that past the hour. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls and Jennifer Kogan, 303-713-7600. Hi, this is Aaron Hart on AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk. I'm filling in for Jay this week. Happy to be with you. Joining us now is Jennifer Kogan. She is the chair of the Democratic, County Dems, and she's joining us to speculate about who Governor Bill Ritter might appoint. We know for sure it probably won't be as weird as, not that Roland Burris is weird. He seems like a very nice man. He seems like a very progressive fellow, lately been a lobbyist, contributed more than $15,000 to Blagojevich's campaigns over the years, and is known to be a quote-unquote crony, which can take on another connotation in Chicago or anywhere for that matter. Here we've got a slate of politicians whom Governor Ritter can tap to be senator of from the state. You know, Jennifer, I have a question to ask you. Why have not we ever elected a woman to be Colorado's, you know, I can't even think of a mayor of Denver who's been a woman. Damn it. What's wrong with us?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in the first place, we had to make sure we could elect a Democrat.
this is true. But Denver, for example, has a history of
Pat Schroeder before Diana DeGette.
Well, at the Colorado House of Representatives, we've always been very much represented, which is great.
Yep.
But no governor, no senator, no mayor of Denver that
and
I can
have
think
good
of.
Women. We have women like Gail Shetler, you know, who had run and lost. There's a lot of really great possible women out there. But I think, you know, unfortunately, you've got two issues. One, as I already alluded to, you first need to
strike a red state blue.
Exactly. And then secondly, quite frankly, you got to break through the glass ceiling. You got to break through the old boys network. And men have been at this game a lot longer than women have. They have deeper pockets in many respects. I think women are beginning to hold their own. You have a lot of great programs out there, like the White House Project, like the Blue Flower Fund, all of which are
Emily's List.
Build a bench. Emily's List. Yeah, and the Blue Flower Fund, by the way, is like a baby Emily's List, but only for the state of Colorado.
Blue Flower Fund. Wow. If I move back, I'll think about that.
Yeah, it's a small donor committee, so it's a great opportunity for people to get $50 a year, and we can buy the money and be able to contribute up to $4,000.
Well, now, we only have a few minutes remaining, but I kind of wanted to get some historical perspective from you about Barack Obama's election as President of the United States, because to me, this was a whole new ballgame in terms of ground-up politics. How did it change in terms of politics? And will the change be sustained no matter who is at the helm of the ticket?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people have talked about this is a new game, this is a new idea. It's not. You know, you had Saul Alinsky, who wrote Rules for Radicals back in the 70s, which has been my handbook as long as I've been a grassroots organizer. And the great part is Barack Obama is a community organizer. He took a page from that handbook, and his people who were in positions of leadership, who were in positions to make decisions, decided to do things the old-fashioned way. They met with people one-on-one, found out what values they felt were important to them and what was going to motivate them, and motivated them, and then empowered them to take it on themselves. We had a 1,000% increase in caucus participation. 2,700
wow.
4 years ago to 27,000.
Same here. I was a delegate. I've never done that before in my entire life. I had such fun. It was really great. I mean, go ahead.
I was just going to say that then precisely what you're talking about, which is how do we then sustain that without one human being that we're...
Without a very charismatic individual, right.
Exactly. And that is what we're facing at the county party. That's what every county party is facing. And a lot of the county parties are looking at how do you build that support. There's a big difference between a campaign that ends in a finite period of time on Election Day and building the party over the long haul. It's going to be a challenge to the county parties to harness the energy, to be able to empower people who worked on the Obama campaign and let them loose, in a sense, to go organize their communities in the way they see fit and build on the shoulders of what we've done. Boulder County has already begun meetings. Denver County, we're having a training January 10th to better educate people about how they can get elected, to fill positions, to be precinct committee people. And we literally simply have to build on the shoulders of what's already been happening. But Ray Rivera, the state director of the Obama campaign, we gave him an award because I felt like for the first time...
He was amazing. Yeah, no,
amazing.
No.
He and his leaders, they had a lot of respect for the county parties. I had no less than 7 phone calls from different people from his campaign asking to meet with me. I finally called and said, Ray, can I meet with everyone at one time?
At one time, right.
You know, but that's because they had respect for the county party. They felt that we were part of the process. They partnered with us, and that was the first time that that's really happened in that
See,
manner.
What won me over was they knocked on my door. A couple of fresh-faced kids in 2007 knocked on my door and said, do you think you could consider? I said, I'm already on the bus, you know.
Yep.
But they were like, I was like, anybody who can have people on the ground knocking on doors in fall of 2007 for the 2008, and in a caucus state, has my vote.
Absolutely. And that's why I supported him. Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. Listen, Jennifer, have a lovely, happy new year. May you get the senatorial candidate you wish and and other things. And have a happy 2009. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Aaron.
You bet.